It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Abby Hornacek.
I'm Ben Domenech.
I'm Dana Perino, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Thursday, March 14th, 2024. I'm Eben Brown. Could South Africa send its citizens who opt to serve in Israel's military to prison? A government policy highlights South Africa's attempts to further isolate the state of Israel on the world stage.
This sort of thing could obscure more than it reveals, but right now you look like you have an increasingly openly anti-Israel South African government, and not one that is going to back down from that anytime soon.
This is the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick, the show, as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform. And watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
South Africa is home to tens of thousands of Jews. They've been living there for more than a century, partly the descendants of Jewish Afrikaners, the Dutch and Huguenot settlers in the southern part of the African continent. Since the end of South African apartheid, the nation there has not outwardly persecuted this minority, but the ruling African National Congress has shown varying levels of hostility to Zionism and the Jewish state of Israel. There are Jews from around the world who volunteer for service in the Israel Defense Force, and there are non-Jews who do this service as well. But as South Africa has taken a more vocal anti-Israel stance, to the point of trying to accuse Israel of genocide of Palestinians in the midst of the war against Hamas, South Africa's government officials are looking to target its Jewish minority. And now they're planning on arresting any South African who volunteers for military service in Israel. Foreign Minister Naledi Pandor, speaking at a rally for the African National Congress, in her words, says, "When you come home, we are going to arrest you." To great applause.
South Africa is having an election this year. So there are domestic politics at play that are impacting foreign policy.
Curtis Mills is a writer on Mideast policy. You can find his work at the American Conservative. He joins us now.
The ruling African National Congress is in a bit of a pincer motion where they're losing their left bloc to essentially what is a black nationalist group. And at the same time, they are struggling to hold a lot of erstwhile centrist supporters or actual centrist supporters because of the economic climate and the rolling blackouts. And the just general disrepair of the country. Hamas and the situation in Gaza has won the sympathy and clamor of what is known as the Global South. Additionally, of which obviously South Africa is an anchor of. Additionally, there is a little bit of subterfuge going on with how involved Russia in all of this. I'm not one usually to emphasize or overemphasize the Russian impact on global affairs. But what I think is important here is that Russia actually had an audience with Hamas, or Hamas had an audience with Russia, I should properly state, earlier this month. And Russia and South Africa have worked sort of hand in glove. So there is reason to believe that they would want to jointly at least cause some problems for Netanyahu and the Israeli government. I would also only add that the nature of dual citizenship itself might become an issue of greater investigation and public condemnation in the years to come as the sort of the age of globalization ends and the sort of, integrated global economy becomes relatively undone.
Well, you bring up the idea of dual citizenship. This is something that much of the world has allowed for years, and not necessarily just because of Israel. It's there are people who are dual U.S. Canadian citizens and the like. Does this really play into it, or is this once again something that is being focused on or hyper focused on because of the Israeli aspect of it?
Well, I think Israeli dual citizenship is simultaneously more important and more incendiary. Canada is not involved in any wars on its border, to my knowledge. And obviously, there's the Quebec separatist thing, but it's a nonviolent affair.
Right.
And so obviously the, you know, Israeli dual citizenship, especially because of the inherent ethno-nationalist nature of a lot of Israeli citizenship, is more important to the functioning of the Israeli state than, say, Canadian dual citizenship. So I think it's because it's important, it's under more scrutiny.
This message or this threat, if you will, from the foreign minister of South Africa that she could prosecute South African citizens who do go enlist in the IDF, that seems like a drastic measure. I mean, it's again, you know, we've had people or people from around the world that do serve in the IDF, but it seems to be an ongoing part of South Africa's. Almost like its history. You know, Nelson Mandela was never quite warm to the state of Israel. He was openly supportive of the Palestinian cause. There have been other South African leaders that have been openly supportive of Hamas specifically. But South Africa is home to about 70,000 Jews still. This could make them stateless in a way. Certainly, I think Israel would probably execute, you know, would hurry up with immigration for them. But this means some people can't go home, get their stuff.
No, certainly, and obviously the reality of statelessness for Jews is laden with a pretty gnarly history. So it's serious stuff. I would add about South Africa. I mean, one wonders if it's on a sort of an African Iran trajectory. I mean, I don't think it has anywhere near the seriousness of military capability or even ambition of the Iranians, but you know, you could see a country that was once a fairly major Western tourist hotspot, arguably the most beautiful, scenic, and accessible country in sub-Saharan Africa, essentially fold out of the Western bloc, a place that people don't go to, and is increasingly, you know, depopulated by non-ethnic South Africans, but just essentially. All the non-native sub-Saharan Africans would just essentially leave the country. It's possible. These things can also be a bit of a red herring, because what is also going on, as I mentioned in this election, and I don't mean to rope on it too much, is that there actually is sort of this sort of centrist revolt in the country that could happen. The ANC could lose power for the first time since apartheid. And you actually could be seeing the government right now motivated to move further to the left, for lack of a better term, because they need to shore up their own base. So this sort of thing could obscure more than it reveals. But right now, you look like you have an increasingly openly anti-Israel South African government, and not one that is going to back down from that anytime soon.
We are speaking with Curtis Mills, a writer for the American Conservative, on Israel facing a growing isolation now at the hands of South Africa, which has promised to prosecute any of its citizens that serve in the Israeli military. On the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition, we'll have more straight ahead. Well, certainly not. This government in South Africa has taken Israel to court, so to speak, at the International Court of Justice, which is part of the Hague. And is alleging that a genocide is ongoing. That's a pretty hard case to make. It's a pretty awful accusation, and I think it's also specifically awful about who the accusation is being made against. Israel was a state that was formed as a response to a genocide, as a safe haven for people who had suffered perhaps the greatest, by greatest I mean the worst genocide. And has thrived ever since. By any metric, it's thrived. And but yet the South Africans are really champing at the bit here. How close are they to finishing their case? I mean, and how close are they to seeing a ruling? And are they swaying the court?
I'm not sure the case itself is as important. I mean, you got to remember, I mean, the sitting president of Russia had an open indictment in the International Criminal Court. So how much this specifically matters in terms of the legalities, I think is no sort of neither here nor there. I think what is relevant is whether or not Israel is isolated and blockaded in the greater global community and throughout the global south, as any of this has pressure both on one, the U.S. Democratic Party, and two, Europe. You could see in Israel that effectively only has the Republican Party in Israel, in the United States, that is anywhere near a friendly voice at the moment. I mean, a lot is really, really, really up for grabs in the next 8 months. You know, if we have a change in the White House, this all might seem like a dream. If the status quo coheres and accelerates, Israel is headed for choppy waters.
Yeah, I think we should talk a little bit more about that. This has been a White House that has been lukewarm to Israel's current leadership. I think they're warm to the predicament. They've been sympathetic, but in terms of the leadership of Israel, they are not exactly on friendly terms, despite, I think, some of the pleasantries that have been expressed from both sides. But there has been an issue with current Democratic Party leadership, from Joe Biden, the president, to the former president, Barack Obama, where there have been accusations of interfering in Israeli elections, specifically targeting the Netanyahu government. Does this continue? Does this further this along? I mean, is there still a desire among the Biden administration to see Benjamin Netanyahu ousted?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if like the administration's official policy is that they want Netanyahu ousted, but I think Netanyahu's in a relatively weak political position, although he has been in a relatively weak political position for quite some time. And I'm sure they would not care or lift a finger if he fell from power. I do think it's notable the disrepair that appears to be going on between Biden, the man, and Netanyahu, the man. That is a relatively new dynamic. And if you listen to Netanyahu, whose speeches, he'll always emphasize that he's been friends with Biden for 40 years. That's sort of like, you know, it's in politics. If you want friends, get a dog. Or in Washington, you want friends, get a dog. So I don't know how seriously to really take that. But I do think there was a meaningful distinction between Biden, the man's relationship with Netanyahu, and his former employer, Mr. Obama. And I think you saw relevance of that relationship early in the administration, in the Biden administration. This was not an administration that was as warm to rapprochement with Iran as the second Obama administration was. So I think there are gradations here. But as the Democratic Party has moved meaningfully to the left on this issue, and perhaps something we don't know, something has occurred between Biden and Netanyahu's relationship in the last 3.5 years. You have seen the relationship become a lot more tepid. And I think there's a view that Netanyahu is increasingly on his own and sort of waiting for the Republicans to win. And until then, we'll see if he hangs on.
Curtis Mills of the American Conservative, thank you so much for being with us on the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
Thanks, Matt.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.